Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and today we're going to be talking about top 10 coaching mistakes and what to do instead, both coaching mistakes of athletic coaches that you might be working with and also our own coaching mistakes as Performing Edge coaches in the mental training area. So I wanted to just chat about that because it's so important to, do things right. I mean, we all make mistakes, but if you can do things right or the best way that you can the first time, that can prevent a lot of issues with clients and can help you with your practice. So I'm excited. We've got new people in the group here. Just an announcement first that next week, normally we do our calls on the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So this is this 12th. So the next one would normally be on September 26th, but my birthday is on September 25th, and I was going to go away that week for a few days. So we'll have our next call next week, September 19th on Thursday. So if you can put your calendar, mark your calendar then for the same time at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. So, yeah, our next call will be not in 2 weeks, but in 1 week on September 19th. And then we'll can resume, in October, same thing, second and fourth Thursday of the month. And so that would be great. So I know we've got, Alex Alex, where are you calling in from?
Well, I'm calling from New York. I am originally from Argentina.
I love your accent.
I lived in L.A. for about 7 years, and I moved back and forth down to Argentina, then up to New York. I've been here for the past 23.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So I was just telling Amy that I just finished my famous PhD. So I am so it's quite an achievement, to say the least. But
yeah.
Nice to see all over.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's great. A lot of people are what they call ABDs, all but dissertation.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's the last thing I wanted to be.
Yeah. So I know you had a question, Alex, about MP3s.
Yes. Thanks so much.
If I could, since Michelle is also new on the call, Newton calling
cool.
in from Bali, Indonesia. Yes, Michelle, if you can, and then we'll come back to you, Alex, in a minute. Yeah, Michelle, if you can introduce yourself, that would be great.
Okay, I'm Michelle, and I'm Canadian, but living here in Bali for 2 years.
So in Indonesia.
And this is my, pardon?
Yeah, in case people didn't hear the Bali part, it's Indonesia, right, that you're living in?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, living 2 minutes from the beautiful ocean. It's gorgeous, and this is my first week in the course, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's great. Why did you want to take this course? Why were you interested?
I'm a homeopath by trade, and I used to coach years ago, coached for about 10 to 15 years ski racing and loved it. And I'm an athlete myself, and I'm really interested in the mental aspect of sport. And I wasn't up for going back to university and doing a PhD. This seemed like a much quicker approach.
Right, that's great. A lot more direct approach here, too. Yeah, okay, well, great. Thanks, Michelle. Welcome. Yeah, so great that you can call. I know it must be, 2 in the morning there?
Yeah, it's 1 a.m.
1 a.m., yeah.
1 a.m.
Thank you. You're 15 hours ahead of us, I guess.
It better be an interesting call so she doesn't go to sleep.
Yes.
That's right.
Exactly.
Have you do some exercises in the middle.
Some calisthenics.
And then we've got Alex, and then did other people, I heard a couple other dings. Who else, did someone else join us?
Hello, Eve from Luxembourg, how are you?
Oh, hi, Eve, how are you?
Yeah. Fine.
Oh, that's great, yeah, we've got a great international call here, yeah, from Luxembourg. And yeah, you go back and forth from Luxembourg to Belgium, I guess?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Are you doing, do you have any progress to report with your athletes or
anything? For the moment, I'm very busy with business coaching. So I'm, in fact, very interested when I talk to them to the mental approach used by athletes. And so I have to adapt the your what we learned from you for business people, and more people are interested in this approach.
Yeah, that's great.
Otherwise, an athlete will finish the triathlon in France, and he's done quite well because when he started swimming, that was during the night, he had some he was eaten by other people. He could not breathe in the water, and he wanted to give up, and then finally decided to continue. And he has done quite well.
Oh,
the
great.
Top, let's say 8% of the race, so it's good. So he learned to use his mental to continue, even if physically was not great. So that's at least a positive achievement following the coaching.
Oh yeah, fantastic! Yeah, congratulations on that. That's great. I know. Diana Nyad, speaking of swimming, Diana Nyad's been in the news, you know, that she swam from Cuba to Florida, you know, at age 64. It's amazing what you can do when you're older. Diana Nyad was the one who, she actually was the one who interviewed me on my, when I did the triathlon and got second in the Hawaii Ironman triathlon in a few years ago back in Hawaii. And Diana Nyad was working as a commentator for ABC, Wide World of Sports, and now she's out there, you know, swimming herself. She's been on CNN several times, you know, for making it from Cuba to Florida at age 64, swimming, just an amazing feat. So, yeah. Is there other people that joined us, too? Anybody
else? TJ, I'm here.
Oh, hey, TJ, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing really well. How's everyone?
Good. Yeah, that's great. Thanks for joining us, TJ. Yeah, and if you you can
just back from Ironman, Wisconsin, where my husband did Ironman.
Oh, great! Yeah, I remember when you first learned to do the visualization stuff here. I think you did one for him, didn't you? And he got
yeah, and then we did another one just because you know, it was 2 years ago, and so we've done another one. But he had a foot problem, and so he wasn't able to train the way that he wanted to, so I did a lot of work with him around that and just about, you know, getting into the race and doing the best that he could. And, you know, it was really a challenge this time because he was in pain and he wasn't trained. So it was quite a bit more challenging than the first time, but
yeah,
he made it through, so.
Oh, great. Well, I remember when you did that first visualization for him for this course, I think you said it brought tears to his eyes, right, that he remembered?
Yeah. And then this time we had three new power words and kept working with him, like, for the 3 weeks before the race, you know, his power words. And then I saw him a bunch of times. The marathon has a lot of out and backs, and so I got to see him a lot. And I would say, you know, what are you? And he would say, I'm strong and experienced and I persevere, which was his power words. So he did keep saying them.
I'm strong. Yeah. I'm experienced. I persevere.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. So that's a good thing. Yeah, you actually ask him a question. What are you?
Yeah.
And then which forces
what are you? What are your power words?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Because I kept talking about his experience just because he felt like, well, I haven't done enough long runs, and I'm not really ready for this. And I said, your body knows what it needs to do. You've run 15 marathons. You can do this. So I really played up the fact that he was experienced. He is experienced. And
yeah,
I think that helped. You know, he kind of knew this wasn't the first time, and he knew he could get through it. So that was a really key word, I think, that we came up with. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that's great. You've got, and your body remembers those things, that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except, you know, the problem with working with your husband is that he doesn't pay you for your coaching work. So.
Well, he may pay it different ways.
Yeah, it's a different. You're very too close to him.
Yeah. But anyway, it was an interesting, you know, it was really interesting for me to be, you know, to have to work with that big of a challenge. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, we've got lots of people. Is there anyone else on the call that hasn't said hi? To make sure we got everybody. Yeah. So, Alex, yeah, Diaz, you're in New York, and you're new in the course, too. And, yeah, you had a question that you emailed me. Do you want to ask your question?
Me, Alex?
Yeah, Alex. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I'm new in this program, and I wasn't quite sure how the MP3 work. So I just want to have some clarification.
Yeah, so the MP3 is it's an audio training that, and you'll see it in the modules there. Some people have already completed the course here, and then other people are new or just going through the course, so you'll see it in Module 1 and Module 2 and 3, how to do the MP3. And the idea is that you take someone through a visualization process, and in the modules, I give you the pre-visualization assessment, so you can ask the person, ask your client or practice client, if you can get somebody, a family or a friend, to work with, or some of you in the course, if you haven't done that yet, it's a great experience to do that, work with someone and ask them the questions that's in that pre-visualization questionnaire, so you get all of their senses, bring them into all five senses and what, about their peak experience, and it doesn't have to be, you know, winning a race or achieving anything great externally. It's just, you know, have them pick an experience where they felt really good doing something, training or racing or competing, and then you take them through this visualization exercise using their words. You know, you write down. It's better to do the pre-visualization assessment, you know, asking them the questions verbally so you get them to talk a lot and really give a detailed explanation of what's happened, what was the, what did you feel beforehand and during, after the event, what were the highlights, what were you wearing, who was there, what were you thinking, what were you feeling in your body, all of that, and you get as much information as you can and write all that down. Usually I have a headset on, so I'm typing it as they're talking. And then you take them through a visualization exercise where you just basically go through and say, and you're recording it, so that's where the MP3 comes in. You just turn it into an MP3 and just talking about, you're going through this, let's say a race or something, and you're at mile one and you're feeling good. And you just go through and go through the scenario that they've given you. So it's basically reading their words and just adding your own, anything that you have that's positive as well. And I take you through that process in the modules there. And then, you record afterward. You record it. You can use this program called Audacity. That's free, a free download there. Or you can use any device, your iPod or iPhone. And record it, and then you can email it to them right afterward. And then it's important to do, I have a post-visualization assessment in the modules there too, where you take them through after the visualization. You have the client, go through their experience and any insights they had, so they can process it and see what they learned and what they can do with it, any actions they want to take based on that. And then you email it to them, and oftentimes people have a real, transformation just that one, in that one session, so you get real results, and that's why they want to keep coming back to you to make more MP3s, more audio trainings for them, maybe one for handling the pressure, one for handling the, for dealing with negative thoughts, one for more confidence. So
Dr. Joanne, so this questionnaire, where do we find this questionnaire?
It should be in Module 1 or Module 2.
Module 1 or 2?
Yeah, if you just started it, let's see, this last week, it might be in Module 2 this next week. Or
okay.
I can email it to you also, just to make sure you have it.
Okay. Well, if it is steady, I can look it up. So let me look at that. So basically then, just go over the questionnaire and gather the answers from the athlete and turn them into a visualization process or imagery process.
Yeah, an audio where you take them through, have them close their eyes, and you can do it over the phone. I do most of my clients over the phone or by Skype, and so you can just imagine them, or you know, take them through this visualization where
mm-hmm.
they're you know, going through their peak experience, and then then you just and you record that. And another process I do is called anchoring, where you you know, when you're in that moment when you felt good, you know, create your success anchor it to a color, create a color, a shape, a word, or a physical gesture, something to remember that experience by. Like maybe you did a fist pump when you crossed the finish line, or whatever it is that you did then, that's what you do now, create this physical gesture, and then you anchor that gesture to a feeling of success, or you associate it with a feeling of success. So next time, you know, let's say, you know, like TJ, you know, your husband, when he goes out to do a triathlon, if he did a fist pump, you know, crossing the finish line in one of his really good races, then, you know, if you do that fist pump, like, right at the beginning of the next race, triathlon, it can, you know, really give you that same feeling of success and experience, right, and perseverance, like TJ, your power words were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah, it helps out. Yeah, let me take a look at the questionnaire. That will really help me to understand more the questions and
Yeah, and then what you do, one of the mistakes, one of the mistakes that coaches make, this can be one of the top 10 coaching mistakes, and I'm adding more here, so it's actually even more mistakes that we can go over, is not telling the athlete what to do with the MP3. That's one of the common mistakes. You say, well, here's the MP3, just listen to it and you'll be fine. But what you want to do is, you know, tell them what to do with it. And I've got suggestions in there. I talk about for best performances, you know, you want to, like, play, I tell them to play the MP3 right now on your computer when you get it, or all the different things you can do with it. You can play it, you know, right away so you can hear it. And once they hear it and hear how good it is, they'll want to play it more and more. And then tell them to download it to their iPod or iPhone, whatever device they have to listen. Everybody's got something these days to listen to music on. And so it's the same thing. They can just it's like creating a playlist, basically. You know, athletes and always create playlists of music, you know, their favorite songs. And now they can create, this is a great idea to just put that thought in their mind, create a playlist of your visualizations, you know, your MP3s. What if they have an Alex playlist right on their iPod? Wouldn't that be cool?
Okay, cool. All right.
And or an Amy playlist, you know, for your clients, or an Eve playlist, or, you know, a playlist for Michelle or TJ. You guys, you know, having that, have them create a playlist with your name or something, or mental training or something called that they'll remember, and then each of the visualizations you create for them, they can go under that playlist, and then they can, or they can download it if it's somebody that's, some people are oriented more towards CDs, so they can, you know, they could download it to a CD, put it on a CD player. And then different things that you can do with it. You can, you know, listen to it right before you go to sleep at night. That's really good to have the client. That's one of the most important times to listen to the MP3, because what we are thinking about before we go to sleep tends to be what we'll dream about. So you want to make sure that they try to listen to it before they go to bed at night. And then you can ask them to listen to it when they first wake up in the morning. That's another time, you know, just to get into a really positive state of mind. Another time that's really good is to, you know, listen to it right before some people listen to it in the car as they're driving to training, although I wouldn't suggest that if it's a very relaxing visualization. If somebody else is driving the car, you know, like if you're working with a 13-year-old, kid and his parents are driving, then that's a great time the kid can be listening while someone else is driving. You could play it, they could play it 5 minutes before their training. I know I was working with Shannon in the World Championships, Shannon Roberry, this last few weeks in the World Championships track and field in Moscow in Russia. And she was saying that, she's got a whole playlist of the visualizations I've made for her, and so she plays them, like, her favorite time is 30 minutes before her warm-up. Mm. She says she likes to do her mental warm-up before she does her physical warm-up. So that's great to, you know, think of it that way, and you can present it to your clients that way. Do your mental warm-up before you do your physical warm-up. That way when you get out there and start working out or you're competing, then, you know, you don't have to warm up you don't have to spend so much time, you know, getting into the zone. You know, you can already get your mind into the zone early on. That way you get more out of your workouts.
Okay.
Because oftentimes we're thinking, you know, while we're training, we're thinking about, you know, the argument we just had with somebody before this or the list of things you have to do afterwards. But what you want to be, you know, just totally in the moment so you get the most out of your training, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, so they can play it before training, play it before a competition. That's a really important time. Because oftentimes, you know, people get really nervous before a competition, so it can give, you know, with your soothing voice on the recording, it's very calming and confidence building that they can listen to this beforehand. And then you can, you know, so those are some of the ideas, and that's one of the mistakes people make, coaches make, to not give a client guidance as to what to do with it. Sometimes they ask, like Shannon asked me, well, what do you have a schedule of when I should listen? What, you know, I've got all these MP3s now. Which one I should listen to and when? You know, she wanted more guidance as far as, you know, she likes to have a training schedule. Her coach gives her that for, you know, how many miles to do and her physical workout. And she was asking for a mental training schedule as well. So you could create that for them. And it, some people don't need that much guidance and they just want to are more independent and they want to, you know, play, choose whatever MP3 at any time and what's appropriate for them. And other people, you know, want more guidance. So you can, if they ask for that, that's great. Then you can create a little schedule and say, okay, do the visualization on peak performance on Monday, and then you can try doing the, you know, let's say they hurt their foot or something, you can do a healing visualization Tuesday and, you know, something else for handling a pressure as it gets closer to an event, you know, handling the pressure, use that one Wednesday. That's just an idea, you know, of giving them a schedule and have them play it before they go to sleep at night. So, yeah, does that sort of clarify that a little
bit? Yes, yes. No, yeah, thank you. Thanks so much. That's
okay,
very
great.
Useful.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that was a great question, Alex. Thank you so much for the MPC question, giving me a chance to elaborate on things.
Yeah, but that was part of the assignment for week one, and I didn't quite understand how to do it or where to get information from, so I was a bit confused.
Yeah, so now you've got that there, and I'll go into the module too and make sure everything's
okay.
There for you.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. So, I wanted to give you an example of a story. You know, next mistake I think is that people make is, you know, this is actually a coach's mistake, athletic coach mistake. One of the athletes at the World Championships, he warned my client right beforehand. He said that, you know, if these women go out, you've got, here's the pace that you can do. And he said, you know, in the 5,000, if they go out in the middle of the race, if they go out faster and they really take off, you know, he said you shouldn't try to go with them because you don't have what it takes. That's what the coach told the athlete. Can you believe that?
No.
I mean, that's really something negative. I think a coach should never say to an athlete, you know, to limit them like that, right? So say, here's the pace you can do, and if other athletes go out faster, don't even try to go with them because you can't keep up with them. I mean, it's in one way, it's the coach being realistic and saying, here's where you're at physically. But and so when she, the problem was, you know, when the race came, then that actually happened, and the other athletes did, you know, start to really pick it up in the middle of the race, and she said, I had those coaches, the coaches' words in my head that I shouldn't go with them, and it really limited me as to what I could do. When she said I felt like I should go with them, you know, so she didn't end up going with them, and didn't get the place that she wanted. She could have, you know, really had a chance to get a medal. Afterward, we talked about it, and this is a situation where you, as a coach, as a performing edge coach, could, you know, help put that into perspective afterwards. She was kind of disappointed with what what happened in the race, and she said, I felt like at that point I could have gone with them, and we talked about how it's important to act. Your coach can tell you lots of things, but at the end of the day, when you're actually in a competition, you're the one that's been in your body for the last 30 years. There, that client is, and they're the ones that have to make the decision ultimately about what to do in that situation. So it's important to be able to, act on your own intuition, and regardless of what the coach says, just go with what you feel is right at that moment. And, I talked to her about how there's been upsets, there's tons of upsets in, major competitions, where things, athletes were able to do things that weren't expected and weren't, they never thought that was possible. That the effect of adrenaline and desire can play a huge role in a race that can't often be measured. And a coach can't always predict what's going to happen. Just, they say, well, based on paper, here's where, so-and-so should be up here, 1, 2, and 3, and 4, 5, and you should be down here at 6 or 7. But, based on paper is a whole different thing than what can actually happen in a competition. And that's why the whole mental training aspect of why we're here today, is talking about that mental part, right, how important that is. And how you can use techniques like my magnet technique and, put that magnet on the back of the runner in front of you and let them carry you to a new PR. And let them, use their energy to draw you through the race. And how effective that is. And once you lose contact with those other athletes, it's really hard to catch up. So I don't know, any of you have comments about that, what you would have told this athlete afterward about how to, what in that situation, if a coach said to the athlete, you don't have what it takes to go with them, and how you'd help the athlete afterward?
Well, I think you have to. Sorry, you go ahead.
Who's speaking?
It's Amy. Oh, you sure? I was just going to say, I would ask them what they feel their strengths are when they're racing. What are the things that they really feel confident in? Where are their areas of strength? And to kind of pace it around that so that they're focusing on the things that they're good at.
Yeah, exactly. That's great, Amy. Yeah. And I know you're working with tennis now, is it, and also ballet?
Not so much at the ballet anymore.
Okay.
I probably will be, but that program is over. But I think I'm going to do more.
Okay, yeah. And you were working with tennis, too?
Yeah, I just had something exciting. I just wanted to tell you quickly. The other day I had a meeting at a performance sports training facility. It's the biggest one in the state, and they do kids between 7 and 18, and they do all different sports, and they want me to be their person to do mental toughness with the kids. They don't have anybody doing that, so that could be a really cool thing.
Oh, wow, that's super.
Wow, congratulations.
That's great.
Yeah.
So
they want you to be their
mental toughness coach. Yep.
I love it, yeah. So that's at a major sports facility?
It's a really big sports training center, and they do all different types of sports. So
wow.
That could be really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness,
that's
great.
That's
yeah, you
great.
Have to keep us informed about that and all the different things that you can do with them. Yeah.
Yeah, so I need to just figure out different programs that I'm going to do with them. And
yeah, a proposal kind of thing. And
yep.
What all you could, this sounds like the sky's the limit as far as what you could do with them, with workshops or training. You could create a whole, line of products, too, of MP3s and, visualizations. And working with all the, and you could consult, with each of the coaches for the different sports. and find out what they need for their particular sport, right, what the challenges are there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of do a little questionnaire of what they want and what they need. And, yeah, I still need to send that, sorry for the delay, that PPQ I have. It's called a pre-program questionnaire with questions. I'm writing a note to myself here to email that to all you guys here and put it in the members area. So I'll have creating it like a new assessment area on the website there, so you can have lots of assessments and forms and different tools there. So yeah, so that because that would be great to, if you can find things that they want that they really need the most. That would be great. Anybody else? That's great, Amy. Thank you. Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anybody else? Did someone else have a comment too? About that, the case with the coach?
I guess my only comment would be it's kind of what Amy was saying, is just for the athlete to look at their own energy level at that point in time, and they might just have to make that decision for themselves based on their own experience and how they're feeling during that point in the race.
Yeah, is that Michelle?
Yeah.
Okay, great, yeah. Yeah, and that's where it's good to teach athletes to assess, what their own, where they're at, how strong they are at that point, and, how much energy they have left, and because oftentimes athletes, I mean, they rely on the coaches, which is important to do, but at the end of the day, when you're in a competition, yeah, your coach can't do the competition for you. You have to decide at that moment how much you've got left. So that's something where listening to the wisdom of your body is really important, to do exercises for that, you know, maybe ahead of time, find out, you know, assess how much energy you've got left. You could have the athletes in different training experiences, you could have them assess that their level of energy, you know, from 1 to 10, kind of like a gas tank. I was just thinking of this off the top of my head. You know, you've got, when you're driving in the car, you've got your gas gauge that tells you how much you've got left in the tank. And, what if you could have one of those to assess your level, the energy level, your sort of your energy gauge. And, and of course that's internal and it's very subjective. But I think after time, you get experience over time, and you can, decide. You can get a sense of how much you've got left in the tank, and you want to be, obviously the goal is to have a full tank at the beginning of a competition, and at the end, have your tank be empty or almost empty, so that you use up everything you've got to do well in the competition. Of course, it depends on the sport. If it's something like tennis, you know, and you're going through the rounds, then you don't want to, you want to save your energy along the way so that you have, save your best for the finals kind of thing, competition. And same thing with track meets. If you're going through the rounds, you want to not use it all up in the qualifiers, but get through the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and then use everything in the finals. But you could have an athlete imagine that, just use that analogy of a gas gauge on a car, and then say, okay, now what if you had your own energy gauge, imagine that out in front of you. You could say, you could use that as a visualization, and, imagine them with their tank and say, and then maybe go back in time to, a time when they did, they were able to use up, use their energy just right, and have them imagine that, if they're just at the end, they're like the, sometimes people talk about a candle, the flame burning down, and so that by the end of the race, or the end of the competition, the candle is all burned out. But you don't want to burn out before the end is the key. So, have them imagine a time when it was used just right, or if they don't have that time, they can create it in their minds, a time when they're use things just right. So, yeah, so that's another kind of example. So a way that you could assess, assess your energy level. And then, and the other thing, issue about this with the coach saying, you know, you shouldn't go with them, is that whole idea of taking risks, I think, you know, and how much of a risk taker is your athlete. If they, you know, have had a good experience in the past taking a risk and, you know, really were able to come from behind and go for it, you know, it's okay sometimes, I think, to take a risk, and you never know what you can do until you actually, you know, take that risk and give it a shot. Sometimes you might blow up, and sometimes you might, run the race of your life. So it's okay to, I think, sometimes to take a risk and just see what you can do. It's better to take risks at first, you know, in training, and take smaller risks where you've, you know, just out within your comfort zone, just outside your comfort zone, so you just barely, you know, kind of risking a little bit, and then see what that's like. And if you have a success experience there, then take another little risk. You know, but that's something to consider with athletes, that it's okay to just, you know, you have to assess, okay, what's reasonable here. If there's a risk that you can take that's a little bit beyond what you've done before, then that's a good thing to give it a try. So, so that's another mistake or the coach's mistake, where you can we can work with them. And some other things I wanted to talk about in terms of mistakes is one thing is not being prepared or focused for a session. I think that's a common mistake that coaches make, where you're, you know, rushing into a session at the last minute, or rushing onto the phone so that you don't have time to really get focused on that one client. You're sort of thinking about, you know, what happened before that, or if you have back-to-back sessions and you're just finishing with one client or one meeting and then you're going right into another one. Some of the clients can usually sense that if you're not totally focused on them. You might be distracted or tired. And so I think that's important. And you might end up, you know, losing the client if you're not, really focused on what they're doing. So I think the best thing to do is to, in terms of scheduling is really important, to have that time in between. Let's say if you got two clients, I always make sure that, I've got at least 15 minutes, or ideally half hour to an hour between a two clients, if it's two really important clients, and so that I can go out for a walk or clear my head and or do something else. If it's both on the phone, you know, after a while your ears kind of get tired just being on the phone a lot with just talking. So it's good to get away from your computer and away from the phone for a little bit to clear your mind. And then, you know, oftentimes I'll go for a quick walk in between clients, and it gives you a chance to think about what you just did with that past client, to process that through and kind of say, okay, what did I do right well, and what could I improve, or what do I want to do with this client next time, and just sort of close that, process that through, and then close that chapter, and then be able to say, okay, now, so, and then the next part of the walk, I'll think about the next client and say, okay, here's client B, and what do I want to accomplish with them, or where are they at right now, and just review that and kind of get in the zone for the next client. That way, when you start on the phone with them, you know, it's kind of like doing your own mental training workout for, you know, getting ready for a good coaching session. So that you're fully ready for them, and that way, it just makes life easier for you, because you have a really good session and the client wants to continue with you, and you can create really good relationships and it leads to, you know, you getting more clients, and you don't have to work so hard because you're getting new clients because the ones that you have want to stay with you because you're just providing really good training and good coaching. So think about, just being the more prepared you are, the better. And I think I know all of us are probably active in some way. That's why we got into sports psychology. And so it's really good to, I think, you know, you get more energy just by being active, even if it's just a quick, walk outside or if it's just doing a few jumping jacks in place. I know that sounds crazy, but actually that's a great thing to do, you know, just like we used to do as kids, a few jumping jacks or skipping in place or marching in place, you know, just for 2 or 3 minutes just to get the blood flowing. It just works wonders, I think, to get yourself woken up and ready, excited for the next person. I find when my body's moving, then my brain starts moving as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then I'll come back to my computer, and then, like, you want to look at your client notes from the last week, if you have them, or notes from anything you know about the client if it's the first session, and, think about their needs. And then really think about what your intention is for this session. You know, what is it that you'd like to do? What kind of feeling would you like to create with the client? And, think about a picture, have your own sort of visualization of what it is, that, how you'd like to have the session go, and so that you're actually practicing, you know, what you're teaching the client to do. You're visualizing, the session going really well, and that you're totally in tune with what they're saying and listening on a deep level, and communicating with them, and just being able to provide the right kinds of tips and recommendations, you know, based on what they said. And you know how it is, when I'm sure you've all had that experience when you've really been in sync with someone, whether it's a client or maybe it was someone in your family or relationship, where you're just totally in sync with what each other's saying and your energy level. So if you can imagine that, you know, your own peak experience with being in sync with someone, then you can use that, then actually create your own anchor, you know, your own success anchor for that, you know, your fist pump or your the okay sign or whatever it is that you might want to do for that, and then use that, you know, going into the next session with your next client. So, and one of the mistakes people make is not asking the right questions with clients or not asking the best questions. You know, maybe just talking too much as a coach. You want to, you know, get them talking as much as possible. So ask open-ended questions and ask questions based on, you know, research you've done. If it's a top athlete, you know, you can often research them on the internet and see what their background is so that you know more about them. Just really getting into their own head and imagine, you know, stepping into their shoes. If I was this, like, I'm starting to work with a top basketball player now back east at Georgetown University, and he's looking to go on to the NBA, and so he's got huge potential, but he's also got a huge amount of pressure with the team there and being on a full scholarship, and so I'm thinking, what would that be like to be, you know, there as a where the whole team is sort of leaning on you to perform well and to make the points for the team. And so I sort of get into that frame of mind so I can relate to what he's saying. And if you have any experience yourself with that sport or with that, similar to the client that you're working with, then it's okay. It's good to relate that with the client. Like, I used to play basketball when I was younger, and so, you know, I can relate that experience to him, or if you've got a client that's injured, and you know, you can, if you can say to them, like, this guy just broke or just sprained his wrist, and I said, yeah, I'm an athlete, and I've been, you know, had injuries. I know what that's like. It's no fun, and just relating that, you know, being bummed out about having an injury. So that's a good thing to, you know, be able to relate to the client. So that's another mistake, is not being, you know, not being prepared. You want to be prepared and focused. And then does anyone have comments about that or any questions about that area? Everyone's, okay, that sounds good. Well, can you all hear me okay?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay, just make sure. Got you in a daze here. Yeah, okay, great. And then, you know, another mistake that people make is not doing your research before talking to your athlete. If it is someone that's, fairly well known or has a history, or if they're in college, usually you can look up their name, you can Google their name, and see what their accomplishments are. Like this, with this basketball player, the parents wanted me to look up his name and see what he's done, and also I did that, ahead of time, and tried to find out what their, how he did last year and what he's going to be doing this year and that sort of thing. And so you want to do that. I made a mistake a year ago or so. With a top athlete, and I said, I thought he was doing this one race the next weekend. I said, well, good luck in your next, in this race, down in L.A. or something. And he says, no, I just did that race last weekend. And he got upset because I didn't know about that. And so because he was fairly well known, he figured everybody should know about that. So that was a mistake I'd made in the past. That I should have, just looked online on his blog. Often you can look on their blog or their Facebook page, and they'll be, reporting on what they've done. So you can find out that way easily as well. And so if you can be a little bit informed about what they're doing, now, thanks to Facebook, we can find out a lot about people. That works out really well. And if it's a newer sport for you that you're not as familiar with, you can always, that's the great thing about the internet now, you can Google the sport. And I often go to YouTube and, Google the sport, and so I can find out more about it. I mean, I had one woman that was into Irish dancing, which I didn't know anything about Irish dancing. there's a lot to it, and competitive Irish dancing. So I looked up that, and I could actually see, when you get a visual picture of what the person doing their sport, and then often there's commentators that are commentating on the, the level of the competition and what they're doing. The commentator is giving you a lot of information about the sport, what to do, what not to do. They're actually, instructing you. And so it's great to, if it's, a sports that's been on TV, maybe you might not find that your client, on that, doing that particular sport, but you can see other people at the top level, what they're doing and what's, what your client is aspiring to there. I mean, I had one client that was a bucking bronco in a rodeo a while back. I had no clue about that sport. So I had to go online and look up bucking broncos and rodeos. And, find out that, you only have 8 seconds to stay on this bull, and you're getting just a tremendous pressure to perform really quickly. So, so if you can listen to, go online, learn more about that particular sport and their, listen to the commentators, learn their language, learn what it is that they're saying so that when the client's talking with you about, all the particulars of what they're doing, you can, you don't have to be an expert, but you can understand the language that they're using, and you can relate to them better. And you can, just by asking questions, you can, even if you don't feel like you know what they're doing exactly, like Amy, you're dealing with all these different sports, you said with, in this new sports center, there might be some sports that you're not as familiar with, but asking lots of questions, it puts you in control, makes you look like the expert, and you can learn more of what they're, and you can say to them, well, I know about the sport that you're doing, but what I want to know is your particular experience of it and how you describe it so that you're, because sometimes they might feel like, well, I don't want to you know, tell, give you all the rules of the sport, or you know, all this particular stuff, and you can say that you don't necessarily need all of that background, but you just want to know how you understand it, you know, what particular things are important to you, and that way you can get them to, you know, describe the important aspects for you. So that was another mistake that I wanted to talk about.
May I ask a question?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because when some of the clients that I normally see are high school students.
Oh, yeah, this is Alex? Yeah.
Yes, Alex.
Uh-huh.
And so they come the first session with the parents. So do you have experience working with them together? Do you, in the first session, do you see the kid alone first, together with the parents? How do you manage the discussion, either together, separately? I'm just curious if you have anything to share with us about that.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, Alex. Thanks. Yeah, I work a lot with parents and kids, and it depends on the situation. If they're local here, then I see them in my office. If they're not local, then I'll do the session over the phone. So if it's local, then often the parents might bring if the kid's under 16. Then they're probably not. It may not be driving a car yet, so the parents will bring the child here, and that's a good opportunity to meet both the parents and their kid. And so, for that first session, I'll often ask to see the, you know, say, well, you can both come in for the first, you know, 20 minutes or so, or 30 minutes, and you know, and then for the last half of the session, just see only the kid, and you can have the parent sit out in the waiting room or go for a walk or whatever if you don't have space in your, like I do my work actually out of my home here, and so I just have the parent, you know, sit outside in a waiting area. But if you don't have a waiting area, you can have them go for a walk or sit in the car or whatever you want. Parents are really happy to do that because they, you know, they can do stuff on their iPhone or whatever. Or from the car, they can make calls, that kind of thing. So I'll, but during that time, the first session, if you can talk with both the parents and the child together, it really gives you a great sense of the communication between the parent and child, and a lot of times you can tell whether the child is, you know, the dynamics between the two, whether the child mm-hmm. wants to please the parent, you know, is really into that sort of, you know, wanting to do everything just right, or some kids it's just the opposite, and they want to, whatever the parent says, they want to do the opposite, and there's a lot of conflict there. And on the parent side, you can tell if the parent is really pushy and has super high standards for their kid. Maybe sometimes that's the problem, is that the parents are, you know, putting too much pressure on the kid. So you can kind of get a sense of all that. And I'll usually, you know, try to provide equal time between the parent and the child in terms of the questions. I'll just, you know, start off by saying, tell me what's going on, or what, you know, what brings you here, and I'll look at both, you know, look over to the parent, and I'll look at the kid, and back and forth. I usually try to get the kid to talk first, because sometimes parents want to sort of take over, so I try to have the kid talk first to, you know, get their perspective, and then see if the parent, you know, the parent usually want to give some background information as well, and that way it gives you a chance to you know, build a relationship with both the child and the parent, and because the parent's obviously paying the bill
mm-hmm.
for the kid to come to you, so you want to have the parent see what you're doing, see your level of expertise, see that you can do good things for their child, and buy into the situation, buy into what you're doing, so that they are invested in you, and that way you're much more likely to have you know, the parent agree to continue, you know, working with you, with the child. So I'll, I'll have, and that's what, I guess, in terms of mistakes, you know, since our session is about coaching mistakes, one of the mistakes that a lot of coaches make is they don't include the parent enough. They're just want to work only with the kid, and then if the parent isn't informed about what's going on, then you know, they may just say, "Well, I don't know what you're doing with my kid," and they may want to just stop the sessions or stop paying for sessions.
Mm.
So
okay.
Yeah, if you can get the parents to talk more, that's great. I mean, you can really get a sense of what's going on. I had one ice skater, an 11-year-old girl who was an ice skater, and she came in and her mom came in too, and the mom says, "Yeah, she's got, you know, she's 11 years old. She's got 7 private coaches."
7.
At 11 years old.
Wow.
7 private coaches. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, and the child probably wouldn't have told me that, so I got more information from the parent. Yeah, you know, when it was ice skating, it's very complicated. You know, she's got a strength coach and her jumping coach and her choreographer and her...
all at once?
At various times during the week.
Okay.
You know, she'd meet with different coaches.
Seven.
But she didn't have a sort of mental training coach, you know, like me, to put it all together. She was feeling so much pressure. So that's why it really helped for her to be with me. And she'd actually written 2 books about her child. That shows you how invested she was. She says, "Yeah, my kid's on a Olympic track here." So the parent is really invested in getting her child to the Olympics. And but also putting tremendous pressure on her child. So I got to learn a lot about that. The parent actually brought in the books that she had written about her child, and she brought in all kinds of pictures. And so I got a sense of what that was all about. The parents are really invested in this, but even more so than the child. Sometimes, a lot of times, parents are living through their kids, you know.
That's right.
Wanting their kids to do what they never were able to do.
Yeah.
So there's that going on. Yeah, so that's for if you're in an office situation. And then after that, I'll usually just have the parent bring the child and then see the child by themselves for most of the session. But at the end of each session, if the parent is there, then I'll often say, "Well, here's what we did today," without going into all the details or not sharing. You don't want to share all the personal details that the child shared. Otherwise, they don't feel like it's confidential. And I would just talk briefly with the parent and say, "Oh, here's, we did A, B, and C, and yeah, here's homework for the week, or yeah, here's what I'd like to, here's an MP3.
Do you use any particular mental assessment questionnaire tool, or you just go by your own experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. A mental assessment questionnaire. I have a questionnaire that I use initially, and I think I went over that in one of the modules, but I'll go back and see. I just need to check and make sure everything's in the modules that needs to be there. The initial questionnaire that talks about I'll put that in the assessment section, in the members area here, and just to make sure it's there in a place where you can find it easily. Yeah, I just ask about how your questions like, tell me about your sport. And these are things that you can ask the client, themselves over the phone or by, or in the office. So things like, a questionnaire. I ask, what prompted you to seek help at this time? What do you want from your sport? Which sports are you involved in? Because sometimes they're involved in more than one. And I ask things like, what are your primary goals and what vision do you have as an athlete? I'll ask things like, what obstacles or mental or physical barriers are getting in the way? So it could be mental or physical barriers. You want to cover both. And then I'll ask, what skills or knowledge do you need to develop? And I ask, how do your athletic goals support your personal goals? So sometimes, a personal goal might be to get, for the kid wants to get into college, athletic goal might be, you know, doing well in their sport like volleyball or soccer, and if they want to get a scholarship, you know, to be able to support their personal goal of going to college, that kind of thing. And then I'll ask, what do you want to do to turn your athletic goals into reality? You know, just good questions to get them really thinking. And I'll ask, what physical injuries do you have now or have you had in the past? And I ask things like, what do you need to change to help your life move forward? Just, you know, a general question about that. And oftentimes people will give you, you know, all kinds of great answers. And then I'll ask them, tell me about a peak performance in your sport, or in your life, the time when you felt great or performed at your best. So those are some of the you know, kind of questions in the area of sports and health and fitness. And then I also ask them, just, you know, have a kind of a personal section of the questionnaire, and I'll ask them, what special interests do you have now? Are there any personal concerns or issues you'd like to work on? So, you know, even though they're sport, they're coming in because of their sport, sometimes maybe they're having trouble at school, or if it's an adult, maybe they're having trouble in their relationship or work, or, you know, finding time to do their training, all of that. So, asking about that, asking them, what do you do when things get stressful, what activities have special meaning for you? Like, some people, like to be out in nature, or, you know, go on particular types of vacations, or have a special group that they belong to. So you can know about that so that you know where they draw their strengths from. Mm-hmm. And then you can ask them, what vision do you have for your life? You know, just draw a picture for me, kind of thing, if things were going well. And then tell me about your family and personal life. You know, and so without going into tons of detail, they could tell you just, you know, maybe if they're married and or if they have kids or that kind of thing. Or if you're working with a kid, they can tell you if they're an only child, which is a whole different dynamic than if they're, you know, if they have other siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's a, you know, an adult, you can ask them, tell me about your work or business. Your work or business, or if you do other things for income besides your sports training. And tell me about significant events in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe someone passed away, you know, a parent, or, you know, big things like that are important, are good to know. Or maybe somebody got, you know, did really well in, you know, won some major competition. They can tell you about that. And,
okay.
You know, and then always it's good to have a question, anything else you'd like to add, or other things you'd like to tell me. So, that's some other questions that are good to ask. And then with your performance coaching, Performing Edge coaching, you can ask, you know, a third section, ask what do you want to be sure to get from our Performing Edge coaching or performance coaching. So that's a really good question. What do you want to be sure to get from coaching?
What was the question?
What's that?
What is the question again?
Yeah, what do you want to be sure to get from our coaching?
Be sure to get.
Yeah, so, you know, just like if there was only one thing you could get from this, then you kind of really narrow it down to what it is they want, you know, because I think that's one of the mistakes, another one of the coaching mistakes that we I've seen coaches make is, like in the first session, you kind of do an assessment of all kinds of things in a person's life, but they don't really get to the meat of the heart of the matter. You know, usually the client's got one thing on their mind, and so they oftentimes I may not do this whole assessment until, or I'll do it over two or three sessions, not all at once, because they may come in just really upset about something, or really. You know, have one particular thing on their mind they want to work on, and nothing else matters right at that moment. So I'll just, like a laser beam, I'll just zero in on that one topic and get to, because you want to get to their problem, the main problem, the heart of the issue, why they're there, and what they want to work on. And so all of this other, all these other questions might be, you know, not as important at that one moment if the client's really in a crisis. Or often clients will come in because they, you know, there, yeah, there's something that wasn't, all of a sudden didn't happen. They totally blew it on some, you know, this past competition, or they, yeah, just weren't up to snuff, or they can do it in training, but they can't put it together in a, you know, in the event, in a main, important event, or something happened that just kind of really caused a big problem where,
yeah.
you know, either they or their parents said, we got to get some help here.
Okay.
So
yeah.
you want to find out what that event was, or what was that, you know, what was, like that first question, what, why, you know, asking them what prompted you to seek help at this time is a really important one, so that you get to the heart of the matter of what it is that's most important to them. And then you could ask other things like, what are some specific things you'd like to work on right away in our work together? So you can get kind of a list of things. And then I ask, what two steps could you take immediately that would help you move forward? So you can get the client to kind of do their own coaching, their own ideas, find out what their ideas are, what they need to do to move forward. Oftentimes they already know what they need to do, but they just don't have the motivation or don't have the right support or the right system in place to do those things. And then you can ask, what changes do you need to make to help your performance coaching be successful? So just, you know, what changes do you need to make in your sports or in your life? So those are some kind of questions, and I'll just make a note here, make sure that that questionnaire is in the available for you in the assessments here. So that's great. Yeah, you've got great questions, Alex.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So yeah, we've gone over some of the of the mistakes, and I have more for you, but I want to. I'll tell you one more now, and then we can do, we'll meet somebody who came on late. I wanted to make sure you heard the announcement that we're going to meet next week, the 19th, rather than the following, the 26th, because that's my birthday that week, so on the 25th. So so if you can put on your calendars to our next PECI call will be next Thursday, September 19th, at this same time, and not the, not on the 26th. We'll skip that week. That'll be great. And then we can go over part two here of the of other coaching mistakes.
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah.
Can I interrupt? It's Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Is it possible to make this meeting a little bit earlier San Francisco time or later in the afternoon, just once in a while?
Yeah, actually.
Or is it set in stone, this 10 a.m.?
Yeah, it's currently at 10 a.m. We could do it at 9 a.m. Would that, that would make it
even
hour.
That would be a big improvement because that would just be midnight as opposed to 1 a.m.
I know you're way over in Bali and Indonesia, so it's really, yeah, that's great that you're, just for this one call, you're staying up this late.
No, no, it's, but with Alex in Luxembourg, I'm not sure what the time zone difference is there. Maybe he's not affected, but.
Now it's 8:15 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, so you're good.
If it was.
Okay, well, only if it, you know, if it works for the group. I don't want to inconvenience people, but if people are flexible, it would, you know, I'd really appreciate it just.
Yeah.
It works for me. I'm good. I'm Alex. I'm fine.
Oh, Alex, yeah. How
yeah.
about you, Eve?
It will depend because I will be between Luxembourg and Belgium at that time. So if it's we start at 7 p.m. and then it will be at 6 p.m. That's it. 6 p.m.
Well, currently we're starting at 10 a.m. here. So I was just suggesting 1 hour earlier, 9 a.m. So would that be 1 hour earlier for you? Yeah, 6. Would that work for you? Or
it will be difficult here. It will be difficult to because I'm traveling at that time.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, we can keep it at.
Okay.
We can vary it, yeah, you know, do 10 sometimes and 9 sometimes, yeah.
But next week I'm not I'm in Africa, so I will not be able to call.
Okay. So maybe, yeah, next week we could do the 9 a.m., 1 hour earlier, if that would be okay.
That would be great.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. Sure.
Thanks,
yeah.
You guys.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Thanks. And, yeah, that will be great. Yeah, one other mistake I was just going to mention is, you know, not getting a test. This is just a kind of thing to help you as a coach, not getting a client testimonial after successful coaching. So, yeah, it's really important. If you do have a really good coaching experience, you want to, you know, develop your credibility, and it's important to try to get some, either a text, just a statement from them. It could be written or is good. Audio is even better, and video is the best. If you like, if a client's coming into my office, sometimes I'll just have my video camera there, and if right after, if they've had a good session or if they've had a good experience, let's say they had a really good race or competition, then I'll say, and they said, God, that was just fantastic. I used some great skills. I'll say, well, could you, I have my video camera here. Would you mind just saying that, you know, on video real quick? And, you know, just make it real informal and just have them say a couple, you know, a sentence or two. And then you've got that, and you want to get their permission, written permission to use that, then that works great. Sometimes also one of the mistakes is asking, you want to, if they're doing a major event somewhere, it's better, and they're having a good experience with you, it's better to ask them to get a testimonial before the event rather than afterward, because afterward, if they don't do well in the event, then they don't want to talk to anybody. Oftentimes afterward, they're not in a good mental space to, you know, give a good testimonial. Or if they did really well, oftentimes they're so busy, you know, with other things or getting ready for their next competition, they don't have time to talk to you. So it's better to, if you feel like they're, you know, happy with what you're doing, then have them say something, you know, before their competition, so that no matter what happens during the competition itself, you know, you have a good, you know, positive, you know, comment from them, and they're, most clients are really happy to do that for you. So, yeah, I wanted to thank everyone for coming. We'll do a part two of I have many more mistakes to talk with you about next time, and so we'll meet next on the 19th, a part two of this, and we'll do it. Yeah, for Michelle's request, we can meet an hour earlier at 9 a.m. Pacific time, so it'd be 12 Eastern. And, yeah, and then midnight your time, Michelle, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, sounds great.
Bright and early.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Thanks,
yeah,
Eve.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Eve, for joining us. Yeah, that's and sharing your story about the triathlete. That's great. Yeah, yeah, great. Thanks, Alex, for coming.
Okay, yeah, sure, welcome. Yeah, thanks for your answers.
Yeah. Anybody want to just mention anything that was particularly useful for you in this session, or any gems that you got?
Yeah, I got a couple of gems. I was actually just thinking to myself, wow, that was really great. And now, of course, I can't, you know, come up with any. I thought your questionnaire was, your evaluation process was really interesting, to just really pinpoint, you know, on that initial meeting with them, what it is that they want to achieve, you know, through this performance coaching, so that you get to the meat of the issue instead of, you know, possibly wasting a lot of time and you know, not honing in on what really is the crux of it all. So that was very useful.
Okay, great.
And I thought what you said about the testimonial was also great, because that's something that you could easily overlook, and it's all about marketing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that can really help build your credibility, and clients are always, most of, you know, my experience, they're always happy to say something good about you, kind of thing. So that helps other people to realize, hey, this person's really worth working with. Yeah. So great.
The one question I have for those of us that are not psychologists, when you're, you know, when they have an issue that comes up, that's for us, for someone like myself, who is more into the coaching part of it, there are certain no-go zones for me, I would imagine, and I wouldn't have the skill to deal with it anyway properly. And so I'm a little bit concerned about that if they've got, you know, a familial issue or something like that going on. What do people like myself, how would we approach that?
If they have another issue going on?
Well, like other than sports related, you know, it sounded like when you said earlier, when you sit down at that initial, or when you're meeting with your client and there's something on their agenda that's really pressing to them, maybe it's not sports related, maybe it's, you know, they're having troubles with their mom or their boyfriend or whatever, they're, you know, something of a psychological nature that as a psychologist, you can, you know, coach them on, but someone in my situation really wouldn't and shouldn't.
Yeah, I'd say if you, that's a good question, Michelle. And so if you, have a client that has something else going on that's not sports related, and you don't, if you're not a psychologist or don't feel that you feel like it's out of your realm of expertise, then it's always good to have someone else, another professional that you can refer to,
right.
So another psychologist or a therapist or someone, that's fine. And, you know, in your area there, if you can make, get a relationship with other professionals in your area. And that way you can do mutual referrals. And if the client needs help with another, you know, deeper issue, let's say they're having deep depression or something, that's something you probably want to refer to them to a psychologist for. And then, you have to get to know that psychologist and let them know what you do with coaching and with sports, and they can often refer people to you as well. So, it's a great
point. Right. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that way you build those professional relationships there. And then you can use each other's expertise. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Michelle.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us all the way from Bali, Michelle.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne. It was very interesting.
Yeah.
Great, thanks. And thanks, Eve, and Eve from Luxembourg. Yes, great to hear your voice. And Alex and TJ from Oregon. And Amy, thanks for telling your story. I'm not sure if I think people might have gone off the call since it's after the hour here. But, thank you so much for your time and all of you for joining us. And this replay will be in the members area shortly here. And then, we'll talk next week at the September 19th at 9 a.m. Pacific time here.
Great.
Great. We'll see you all then.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks. Have a great day, you guys.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Bye.